Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Arsenal Beat, a podcast which brings together the journalists and reporters who cover Arsenal on a regular basis. On the Arsenal Beat today is myself, Sam Dean from The Telegraph, PA Media's Mark Manbrines, and the chief football writer for The Independent, Miguel Delaney. Now, Mark and I are something akin to regular panellists by now, so you probably know who we are, but Miguel, you're new to the Arsenal Beat, and as we do with all our debutantes, we're hoping you could give us a quick introduction of telling us who you are, what you do, and what your role entails.
Yeah, so I'm a chief football writer of The Independent, a role I've been in now for 4 years. And that's kind of, I suppose, covering across top-level football, but invariably means the big six. So a fair bit of Arsenal. And I've been, as you can tell from the accent and the name, I'm half Irish, half Spanish. I've been living in the UK or in London since 2012, and I've basically been regularly going to Arsenal press conferences and since then, and Wenger's. So I was well used to Wenger's 8:45 a.m. well, scheduled starts. Then he wouldn't come out till about 9:40. And kind of when I was working in Ireland before that, I would have been over a few times to do Arsenal. So yeah, I've been covering the club for quite a long time.
Obviously, the FA Cup win over Newcastle this weekend was their fourth in a row. And we'd like to sort of talk about that, but primarily focusing on the increasingly interesting and fast-changing centre-back situation. So against Newcastle, it was David Luiz on the right of Pablo Mari. And for the previous three games, it was Rob Holding alongside Mari. Now, Mark, what would you say the first choice pairing is right now for Mikel Arteta, and how do you see this one panning out in the long term? Because we know there's a lot of uncertainty in that position.
Well, first of all, thanks for dropping that bomb on me straight away. It's a hard question, but it's a difficult one, isn't it? I think you can't look past Gabriel. I don't think. I know he's been out injured and he's had a few issues, but he's been great since he came in. You only have to look at the issues we saw with William Saliba to know that it's not an easy transition to make at that age into a new country, new language and things like that. Gabriel was taking it all into his stride. I think he did strangely struggle a little bit towards the end before he came out of the team with the injury and the suspension, of course, but he's going to play every week, I think, when he's back and running. But at the moment, the story's Rob Holding, isn't it? And when you looked at the summer and he had, I think if you included Blatinac and Tierney as centre-backs, because obviously he used to play with the three, he had 10 centre-backs available to him. And who would have thought Rob Holding, who was potentially about to sign for Newcastle, would actually be one of the starring lights of that team. And the fact he's about to sign a new deal, might have even signed it by the time the podcast goes out, just shows his commitment and also what Arteta thinks about him. And he's looked really good. I think part of that is straight away he seems to have stumbled into a partnership with Pablo Mari. And again, Mari was the forgotten man. He'd played two or three times since joining in January with injury and COVID bringing the game to a standstill and things like that. Yeah, he's come back in and he's just looked brilliant. He's good looking, but he's looked brilliant in the team as well, hasn't he? It's one of those things where I think he has genuinely surprised a lot of people. And it's cost, if you add the loan fee and transfer fee together, around £12 million. Now that's what a steal that is all of a sudden. You know, we talk about clubs getting players and having to pay over the odds, yet they've gone for this player that almost didn't really get a chance at Manchester City, so you can't say he failed. I think he's doing a great job. And the only other thing I would flag quickly before you can tell me to shut up is I think the influence of David Luiz on that back line, I think, is severely overlooked. The pitch as well as on it. You know, most of them are young or they haven't played hundreds of games yet. Here's a winner, almost a leader, if you like. And for someone who is questioned so regularly about his performances, really turned it around since that Manchester City game after restart. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see him stay for another year.
I was going to say, Miguel, I remember you writing a big piece about David Luiz not so long ago. We know he can be a very strong personality and a strong character in the dressing room. He's now got 6 months left on his contract and then he will be free to leave Arsenal. And it's, I suppose, an interesting dilemma about what they do with him now, because he's a very important man behind the scenes, particularly with some of the younger guys. Yet, obviously, he's getting on a bit and he's not playing as much in the league as he was. I wonder what you make of that situation and what you make of Luiz in general as a concept, because I think that's what he is these days.
Exactly, yeah. I think as I put it in that piece, I mean, one of the strange things and almost what sums him up his career is that he's a player playing in a defender's position who isn't really a defender. And it was Chris Uden that put it to me that you can see it, like, and Uden, of course, being a fullback himself and probably a coach who's most associated with organising defences, really, saying when you watch David Luiz play, he's got a lot of qualities, but he doesn't think like a defender, which is, of course, why he's always been, I suppose, better suited to a specific role in defence, which is usually at the heart of a three or kind of a more sweeper position. As regards his future, I think it's because of the fact he hasn't been playing as regularly, it's a bit more difficult to call. You would think maybe given this recent shift toward a younger squad, Arteta maybe would be more inclined to not renew. But of course, he is, as you said, he is an influential figure, David Luiz. But just, I mean, as Mark was talking there, I was thinking the entire centre-half situation at Arsenal, it's maybe more reflective than any other area of the situation that Arteta inherited, which is basically a squad built to a few different designs that hadn't really decided its ideology. Hence, you have this array of centre-halves. And the situation Arteta is in there, where he almost has to pick out what might work, what doesn't work, kind of almost see as he goes. And like, as Mark said there, as at the moment, it seems kind of not quite stumbled on a solution, but kind of worked towards something that looks better, having gone through a lot of options. And there's a lot of that with the job in general.
Yeah, completely. And I think the holding, as Mark said, the holding resurgence, I think really proves that. I think since he signed for, what, £2 million from Bolton, they've signed seven centre-backs since then. Yeah. And yet, all those years down the line, he's now arguably the first choice and he's started 10 of the last 11 league games. It just shows, you know, where's the coherent planning, coherent thinking there. But also, as Mark said, it's testament to his character and his own ability as a player.
Well, the one thing about that, I mean, you mentioned kind of David Luiz's influence. I think holding is seen as a really kind of good figure to have around as well, good personality. But of course, I mean, just in relation to the number of centre-halves they've signed since holding, I do remember, like, in the last few years of Wenger, when we were getting to the point where, you know, it was almost like you were doing the same pieces on Wenger every few weeks or every few months. One of the recurring issues, though, was that, and it's actually... It's a little bit like Pep Guardiola until recently. But one of the recurring issues with late era Wenger was that he couldn't seem to sort his centre-half problem. And a flaw with Arsenal as a club at that time was almost they bring in centre-halves and no matter how good they were, it was almost like the club would Arsenalise them and they'd suddenly get these kind of previously dependable centre-halves responsible for these calamitous errors. Maybe Koscielny's the only one who kind of escaped that, but he still had a few howlers himself. And again, I suppose the club has almost been kind of suffering from that as it seeks to restructure.
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning, you just said there, Miguel, about Rob Holding, and I know David Ornstein at The Athletic wrote his piece about the new contract, but he's very much seen amongst the backroom staff there as a potential leader of that squad. Now, you go back a few years, you never have thought Rob Holding would be a leader of that squad, so I see that as probably he's developed a lot more than they thought, but also did it question a dearth of leadership within that squad? You know, could he catch him in the future? I don't know, but it's also worth noting, of course, that he had those two brilliant FA Cup final performances, didn't he? So he was already a bit of a cult hero for a lot of the fans, but I think it's good for him and everything that he's emerging now is actually a contender to play week in, week out. As Sam mentioned, he's a regular at the moment, isn't he? So
it's almost, to make him captain as well, almost feels a little bit one of those kind of Ferguson style moves. He would suddenly kind of, he wouldn't necessarily pick a player who was the most talented, which isn't to malign Holding, but someone who's just a good figure and who would maybe go underappreciated by those outside the club or outside the squad or people looking on from afar.
Holding for England, let's finish it there.
Ahead of the Newcastle game, we set our listeners a question, and as the transfer window is open, we don't want to make ourselves look silly by predicting what will happen in the coming days. So instead, we asked you, our listeners, if you could make one fantasy signing to improve this Arsenal team, who would it be? Now, we said money was no object, but you couldn't pick Messi or Ronaldo, because obviously that's just a bit obvious. So we'll run through a few listener suggestions now and then throw in our own choices before compiling a short list of four to run on a Twitter poll. So keep an eye out for that and make sure you vote in that one. So we will start with at Pello Ponders, who reckons Arsenal should sign Sergio Romero from Man United, a decent backup keeper. Man United aren't playing him in any tournament, and signing him would allow Arsenal to rest Leno without having to worry about the cover. Brackets, Runnison hasn't managed that for me this season. This one's interesting, isn't it, Mark? Because Mikel Arteta spoke yesterday about the goalkeeper situation, and you reported a bit on that too. So how do you see that one, and also the wider position?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, the club, that is now their January priority, I think, is to get goalkeeper covering. I think it was not too many words. Arteta pretty much admitted yesterday that they messed it up in the summer. Arteta decided Lennon would be his first-choice goalkeeper. I know for a fact a conversation was had, and Arteta stressed to his goalkeepers he was going to pick a firm first choice for all competitions this year, which is why Martinez decided to move on. They bought in Runnison because I don't think there was anyone else available. You, Sam, have been across the David Raya story more than anyone else. I think it's quite obvious they wanted him, but they couldn't get hold of him. I don't think they panicked in the end, but I think they know they needed to get a body in. Inaki Kana recommended Runnison, who he's known for a while. It just hasn't worked. He was signed as a third-choice goalkeeper, essentially. It's £1 million from a league inside. And he's been given a couple of chances. City in particular didn't look particularly comfortable. And yeah, so Arsenal have identified the need for a goalkeeper in this window as a priority. I think it will be a short-term or a loan, and they'll look to actually recruit properly again in the summer.
What do you think about Romero, Miguel?
I mean, he's always been a very solid keeper. I've watched him a lot for Argentina because I covered their... I covered pretty much every game with their 2014 World Cup run and also the 2015 Copa America in Chile. And I've always liked him, I have to say. And I think people do speak highly of him as a character. Not to kind of, I suppose, repeat the same what we heard about Rob Holding. But he's seen as a kind of a good, responsible figure. People in the United dressing room like him. And I suppose even the kind of way he's handled what has occasionally been not quite an awkward situation at Man United, but since Romero's been there, there's always been this kind of doubt about De Gea's long-term future. He's been dropped in and out. So frequently it looked like De Gea's going to go to Madrid. And Romero's come in and he's been really solid every single time. Performed some heroics, particularly for Argentina 2014 World Cup in a shootout. He is one of those just under the radar good signings. I mean, it's not the most fancy signing in the game, but it's not exactly a problematic one.
No, it's a Stegen, something like that, that would do, wouldn't it?
We don't want to dwell too much on just one of these, and we've got quite a few to get through, but that Romero one actually strikes me as relatively feasible. I mean, I've got no information to that effect at all, and I can't claim it, but I think his contract's up in 6 months. Obviously, he's behind De Gea and Henderson at United. It just seems to tick a few boxes to me. I wonder if that might be one that actually is on the list somewhere.
It's got to be, if they're going to sign someone in January for a short-term deal, it's got to be a goalkeeper that's not playing. They're not going to get hold of anyone. You're not even going to be able to sign anyone to number two, are you? Because they need number twos for a reason. So it's got to be someone in a position like Romero that is available, isn't playing football, and like I say, would probably happily come in on a short-term basis, knowing he might only play a handful of games.
Yeah. Lee Trotter 8, or at Lee Trotter 8 on Twitter, he went for a player who has been, as we know, very heavily linked with Arsenal. That's Houssem Aouar at Lyon. He says, a creative midfielder who's a very good work rate and could link very well with Thomas Partey in the midfield. Now, we know that Aouar was very high on the list and Arsenal had a bid for him in the summer turned down. They didn't go back on that and didn't up it the way that Lyon wanted to. Do we think he is still a good option for the club?
Yep. Yes, very much so. In fact, my own eventual option is maybe a little bit higher up than Aouar, but certainly along those lines. And it's exactly what the team needs. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, understandable. There's a reason they were linked so heavily with him. There's a reason they wanted him so badly. He's been identified as the answer to the biggest problem they've got at the moment. So, yeah, I could see that still happening at some point.
Miguel, you mentioned there your thinking. Who did you choose and why for your fantasy signing?
I mean, when the fantasy one came up and I was told I wasn't allowed to pick Messi or Ronaldo, my immediate thought was Mbappe, but I think that's a little bit cheating as well. But in terms of, I suppose, specifically what Arsenal need, which is that kind of more perceptive midfielder, and maybe just allowing a little bit of fantasy about it, so to go up from potential targets, I went for Frenkie de Jong. And you know, who knows? It's not exactly gone for a player that good. It's not exactly gone swimmingly at Barca right now. But I do think he's, you know, in about 5-6 years we'll be talking about De Jong the way everyone, and particularly those in Liverpool, are talking about Thiago right now.
Would you stick De Jong in a sort of deep lying base of the midfield three? I know Barcelona sometimes played a bit higher up, hasn't he? Sort of as a number eight.
I haven't seen him in the flesh that much, but I did. He was a little bit more advanced, or certainly getting forward more, when I saw him playing the Nations Cup, well, almost 2 years ago now. I think he'd be, you know, just as capable there, and maybe in a team like Arsenal rather than Barcelona, which is obviously everything there. Like, there's such a massive gravitational pull around Messi. It would maybe allow him a bit more freedom as well.
Yeah, they could always go for Donny van der Beek. I mean, he's already kicked a ball, has he? I'll jump in with one here. Jack Robinson, at King Arson Jr., had a good shout. He said, James Maddison, style of play, number 10, vision, all of the above. Now, we're talking about the need for a creative player. What do you think, guys? Do you think he would fit in well?
I think on the... that's still very unrealistic in terms of the finances involved and the fact that he's at a Leicester team that's very upwardly mobile. But that is definitely, in for me, in this sort of top category of slightly possible transfers before we hit the sort of Mbappe, De Jong, Messi, Neymar territory. I think Maddison seems to me the exact sort of player that Arsenal have been craving. And not least because he's playing for a team in Leicester, which is well organised, disciplined and energetic, sort of without the ball. So we know what Maddison could do on the ball, but I think he's also shown that he can be a very modern number 10 in terms of work rate and ethic and pressing in the way that Ozil has obviously failed to do. So that would be one I think if I was an Arsenal fan I'd be gagging for, however unlikely it might be.
I think he's shown the season as well, isn't he? He can come back from a light adversity, if you like. I know he wasn't completely fit and he wasn't particularly playing very well, lost his place in the England squad even to his teammate Harvey Barnes, but at the moment there's not many players like him, I don't think. I mean, this Grealish comparison's made a lot. I think they're very different players.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
I just think Maddison's a great player, isn't he?
Yeah, and yeah, as you say, you could completely see him. It seems so obvious where he'd slot in with this Arsenal as well.
Lee Faraz has put out two suggestions. He's got with Joshua Kimmich and Rodrigo De Paul. I don't know much about De Paul beyond that. I think he was very close to joining Leeds, wasn't he? And I think he's very highly rated. But I don't know if you guys have seen much about him. If you have, what do you think about him? And obviously Kimmich, we know all about.
I don't know too much. Kimmich, I've obviously watched an awful lot. I mean, for me, he's probably the best right back. And that's if you can even call him a right back. I'd have him in my 11, my best 11 in the world right now.
Yeah, it makes it proper fantasy, doesn't it? And I think with the situation over Hector Bellerin, no one still knows the long-term future. It's actually a good fantasy starting to have, isn't it, as a right-back? I mean, we know Kieran Tierney's got the left-hand side stitched up. Arsenal fans will hope for the next decade, won't they? But yeah, Kimmich would be quite good. Like you, I don't really know a lot about De Paul, other than Leeds were very interested. We know that if you're going to play for Leeds, you've got to have that work rate and that ethic that you've just talked about there. And so straight away you think, he'd be a good answer to some of Arsenal's woes at the moment in that regard.
There's a theme developing here because the name I've picked is someone who I think a lot of the world's been keeping a very close eye on for quite a long time now, and that's Martin Odegaard, who is essentially not playing at all at Real Madrid, having been called back from loan. Apparently on Zinedine Zidane's request, he came back from loan from Real Sociedad, where he had a very good season last year, and he sort of really seemed to grow into a man last year, having been obviously this prodigious boy in his teenage years. And he's 22 now, contract's up in June 2023, so that's starting to get towards the running down territory. He's not playing at all, and And we all know, I mean, anyone who paid even the slightest bit of attention to European football will know that Odegaard was this godlike talent at the age of 15, 16. And he was, I think he's the youngest player to ever play for Norway. And he obviously joined Real Madrid at such a young age and has had a few loan spells. But it seems that every loan spell he went on, he improved and got better and better. And you look at him and think, at his age, he should be young, he should be hungry, he should have a point to prove after so many people have commented on him and suggested he's not as good as we all thought he would be. And that just strikes me as the exact sort of person you could drop in, left-footed playmaker, great vision, drop him into the Ozil void and then build your attack around him for the next 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, well, he's maybe the sort of profile that Arsenal could very realistically get, because Madrid have made a bit of a habit with this sort of player recently, actually. He's basically, he's obviously good at almost every club, almost every situation he's been in. But with Madrid, he's just not quite good enough to get in their team, and to not get the sort of football that Madrid should allow is kind of to the detriment of his career. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, he feels like a very realistic possible signing.
Yeah, Sam didn't really get the memo about fantasy here, did he? I thought he might go a bit higher. But no, I think it's worth saying, isn't it? Maybe he would have played a bit more at Madrid this year if they weren't struggling so much. It's hard, I suppose, to drop someone into a team that's struggling a little bit. And also, we just got to all hope for his sake he's not the next Freddie Adu, haven't we? I will move on to at Addy1199. He also picked two names, but I've just picked one out because I think it's an interesting one, and that's Edouard at Celtic, obviously looking for a striker rather than an attacking midfielder. What do we make of that one, guys? I know another, again, he was linked with them in the summer. I don't think there was a firm bid, but the way Lacazette's been going lately, do they need to add a striker at the moment, do you think?
I think we're moving, again, slightly beyond the realms of fantasy and into the sort of realism, if that's the right phrase. Essentially, Edouard's one to watch, not just with Arsenal, but plenty of Premier League clubs and some of the bigger teams around Europe. His contract expires next summer, so if Celtic are going to make any money off this guy, they have to sell him this coming summer. I believe he's recently changed agency as well to join one of the biggest agencies in football, who have a track record of moving players to big clubs. So I really think that this summer there'll be a bit of a fight for him, for his signature. I think friend of the beat, Charlie Watts, has reported in the past that Edouard's an option for Arsenal. And I can certainly see them pursuing that one because, as we know, Lacazette's time at the club is likely coming towards an end. Aubameyang's getting old, and whether Eddie Nketiah is ready to step up and be the main striker, I'm not sure right now. And I'm not sure whether Arsenal are sure on that either. So that could be one to watch. But yeah, there are certainly going to be quite a few clubs in the Premier League. And you could think of Leicester, for example, where Brendan Rodgers is, who will be looking at Edouard.
I think that's the point, isn't it? I think they might miss the boat on getting hold of him last summer, because I think there's going to be a hell of a lot of interest in him in this summer. And Arsenal, I mean, they could obviously offer him the wages, I assume, that he would want, but can they offer him Champions League football? I don't know. Some of the clubs that would be in for him probably could. But yeah, I worry for Arsenal's sake that they might have missed the boat by not trying pushing the boat out to get him last summer.
So the next one, as we're discussing a particular position quite frequently, at Mezzoot2 has simply posted the word Grealish. Now, I think that's one that pretty much every Premier League fan or fan of any club in Europe would like to happen. Miguel, what do you make of that? If it's okay for me to ask you, how much money would it take, do you think, to get Grealish out of Aston Villa?
Well, I did a piece this just a month ago because Man City are very interested in him, to the point where De Bruyne was apparently, you know, immediately texting Guardiola after Belgium beat England, saying we have to get him. And Guardiola's a big fan. And what I was told at the time was that Villa want 100 million, basically. Now, you'd wonder whether if his form continues, although maybe he just had not a drop off, but maybe he just hasn't been quite as spectacular in the last month as he had been around October, November. But you'd wonder whether that fee could even go up this season, especially, say, if he hasn't moved by the time the Euros comes around, has a good Euros, and then it goes up a bit more. But yeah, I think it's going to be considerable money. And it's remarkable given that a few years ago, Spurs could have got him for 30 million or something close to that. United could have got him for a fair bit cheaper, or sorry, a fair bit cheaper than 100 anyway, I think maybe in the last 18 months. And now he's going to be in a huge price range. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a fair argument at the moment. He's maybe the most entertaining player in the Premier League.
He's definitely one of the most sought after, isn't he? Because with all due respect to Villa, everyone seems to think that they could get him out of that club. Maybe they can. He's definitely the realms of fantasy, isn't it? There's no way Arsenal can afford whatever Villa are going to be demanding. And I imagine he'll be after quite a high rate, quite a large portion of that 350,000 grand they're about to pay.
No pressure, Mark. Come to you last. Who's your pick as the Arsenal's fantasy signing?
I was going to send everyone mad and go for Aaron Ramsey, but I've actually picked. I've gone for Ilkay Gundogan. I've always been a fan watching him lately. Just think he fits so well into the Arsenal team. Arteta obviously knows him quite well from his time at Manchester City. I think he's still trying to solve his midfield problems. We've seen him try a couple of solutions when he's played with a two or a three. I'm a bigger fan of Mohamed Elneny, but I don't think he's long for this world in terms of the Emirates Stadium. There's still a lot of opinions whether Xhaka's the long-term option, although I do think he's a good player. But I do think, especially if you're going to play two, you could play Partey, you could play Gundogan, and I don't think there'd be many better midfield pairings in the whole of the Premier League if that was to happen. He's almost just metronomic with the way he moves the ball around. And I think he'd just get that Arsenal team ticking. Those young players that could run and make use of the way he could spray the ball around, I think would be fantastic. And of course, he's shown lately in particular that he can find the back of the net, which is also important. I think, Sam, you've had the stats before about how few goals that midfield scores, and it's criminal, isn't it? So, yeah, he'd be mine. And I think also it's worth noting he's a winner. He's won things. And that dressing room doesn't have a lot of people that have racked up much silverware, does it?
Cool. So we have got Frankie de Jong from Miguel, Martin Odegaard from me, Mark's choice of Ilkay Gundogan, and then we now need to agree a listener's choice to add to the shortlist. Miguel, anyone jump out from the listener's suggestions that you think is the best possible option?
How close am I going to fantasy or reality?
It's entirely up to you.
Because, I mean, I suppose after that, Grealish is kind of maybe the most fantasy one, but then maybe more realistic, but along those lines, Zouar. So yeah, probably the latter.
You happy with that, Mark?
Yeah, without going too much Gareth Keener from the office, ultimate fantasies, maybe yeah, we'll put it all in. We'll put Awara's name in there, shall we?
Time now for our predictor game, Beat the Beat. The Beat were beaten for the first time last time out when at KChuvo06 predicted a 3-0 win over West Brom. He was just one goal out. Now, we're asking you to tweet your predictions for Thursday's visit of Crystal Palace to us. We're at the Arsenal Beat on Twitter, and you can please use the hashtag Beat the Beat. If your prediction is picked to go up against our panel and you win, you will then go into the prize draw at the end of the season. So, can you beat the beat? Right, Miguel, what's your prediction for the Crystal Palace game and why do you think it will go that way?
I'm going to go for a 1-0 Arsenal win. I think quite a grim game where Arsenal are looking. I mean, it's a Roy Hodgson team they're playing. I say it's grim more down to Palace than Arsenal. I think it'll be a difficult and awkward match. But I just think given them maybe the little bit of momentum Arsenal picked up and a bit of spark about them, that'll carry them through and they'll eventually find their way through.
I've been a bit more positive in terms of Arsenal. I've put down 3-0. I've just got a feeling everything's going to click into place. They managed to rest a few of their players in the cup game on Saturday, obviously. If they can get an early goal, yeah, and it would help my fantasy team massively. I can see them running away with it and racking up 3 goals.
I'm going to go with 3-1 because there's no way that Zaha won't do something of some sort. He always does against Arsenal. And I remember when he played against Arsenal at the Emirates last year, which was a game famous for Granit Xhaka storming off the pitch and swearing at his own fans. But Zaha was so fired up that day. And he was really, really on it. I think I'm right in saying that it took a Matteo Guendouzi rugby tackle to stop him in the last minute from scoring the winner. So he's got a point to prove after Arsenal didn't sign him and signed Pepe instead. So he'll do something, but I think Arsenal have too much for them. So that's why I'm going to go with 3-1.
Shall we argue it down and whittle it down? I'm happy to say 2-1. Shall we go 2-1 Arsenal? Yeah, we all happy with that?
There it seems the perfect midpoint from
might keep us warm at least on Thursday night sitting in the Emirates Stadium, an empty Emirates Stadium with our thermals on.
That concludes the Arsenal Beat for this week. Please do follow us on Twitter at the Arsenal Beat and subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform. I believe we're on all of the relevant ones. We will be back later this week, and also keep your eyes peeled for next week when the second Arsenal Beat special will be released, and that's the ostracising of Mesut Ozil, and we'll be talking in depth about Ozil's career, his time at Arsenal, and what has gone wrong there. So stay tuned for that one, and as ever, stay safe.